Right. Thanks, Carter. Appreciate it.
So I was billed as a data geek, and that's sort of my I just popped open the CD drive, and so that's sort of my roots. I started out in the Epidemic Intelligence Service at the National Center for Health Statistics, and so have a great fondness for data. The reason I have a fondness for data is for what it does for us. We have a unique position in epidemiology and public health to advance our social justice cause and movement by defining what gets measured, because that is what people pay attention to. And so one of the great things that Healthy People in its various iterations has done has given us something to point to and something to point toward, and having those data points to get toward that. And it's really an awesome responsibility to define what gets measured and what questions are asked. And as long as we're looking at it from that lens of social justice, I think we're moving the ball in the right direction. That's all I'm going to say about data, as a data geek. So
he didn't know he was going to be called a data geek.
Yeah, I proudly wear it. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the priorities of the department and the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health, which I work for and Carter works for, some of my particular priorities, and then I'm going to go through an example of how Region 5 and its COIN initiative use social determinants of health and health equity as a framework to improve population health. So some of our priorities, clearly the Affordable Care Act and enrollment in the Affordable Care Act is a high priority for this administration. We've seen incredible progress on reducing the number of uninsured in this country as a result of the Affordable Care Act, and it's been a lot of effort. There were obviously some stumbles at the beginning. I would be surprised if there don't continue to be some stumbles like that. Overall, more people are getting health care insurance than ever had it before, and that's really important. But the Affordable Care Act is actually much more than just health insurance. And so I want you all to be aware of sort of the visionary piece of the Affordable Care Act, which is really moving from disease care, and it is important for people to have health insurance to be able to take care of diseases when they come up, so that it doesn't bankrupt them or our economy. But we're now moving toward health care in the communities, and we're incentivizing health systems to look at population health. And so as public health practitioners, as epidemiologists, you need to figure out how you're going to react to the sea change in the healthcare system that's going to be moving into the population health realm. It's an unsteady time in that system, and that causes some grief for people who have figured out how to game the system and get as much profit out of it by billing as much as possible. But those who are able to make the shift into the communities where people live, where we're actually going to be improving people's health rather than only taking care of the diseases when they come up, those systems are going to be the ones that are going to thrive following the Affordable Care Act. The others are going to go by the wayside. And so how we position ourselves to provide those data, provide the interventions at the community level, to work with community health workers to get this to implemented is going to be unfolding over the next decade or so. National prevention strategy, writ large, is really about a health in all policies approach. It is an effort between, as Carter mentioned, many federal agencies to look at ways that we can put health at the center of the policies that housing, that justice, that education that labor work on, and really has been an incredible opportunity and challenge to get people to come together on. Tobacco cessation, obviously, continue to have lots of work to do on tobacco. My office works on tobacco-free college campus initiative, and trying to get tobacco-free college campuses throughout the nation. One of my concerns around that initiative, frankly, has been that in making college campuses tobacco-free, that we may actually increase disparities inadvertently by decreasing rates of tobacco use among those who are able to go to college campuses, and then not having those opportunities for folks who don't go to college campuses. So one of the things, and I'll put this out there, one of the things that I'm hoping we can foster is having college campuses, having institutions that have health professional schools, have public health schools, adopt vocational technical, adopt other schools where people who don't go to college or don't have the expertise to implement tobacco-free policies on their campuses, to sort of adopt one and bring them along. And it could be a great opportunity for you, for your students, to have a project working with other institutions that may not see the value. It's hard enough to get tobacco-free policies implemented on a college campus. There are lots and lots of politics. There are lots of, but at least if you have a cadre of people who are committed to it, you have that group that's working on it. Other campuses don't have that. Vocational technical schools may not have that. And we know that rates of smoking are higher among blue-collar workers than white-collar workers. So I put that out to you. Let's Move, the First Lady's initiative to reduce childhood obesity. My office works on the portion of that called Let's Move Cities, Towns, and Counties, where we engage politicians to help work on policies that promote eating nutritious foods and exercise, and we've had some great successes bringing them on board. It's bipartisan sort of thing, and sort of a wonderful opportunity for politicians to check something off. They get a lot of recognition for it. They like that. Flu vaccinations, increasing the number of people who receive the flu shot. It's that time of year again. So, you know, we're being told that this year's flu vaccine is a good match, and that there's enough of it, which means that most of you won't get it until the last minute. So I've always said we should probably tell people that there's a shortage and that they need to go out right now and get it, or they might not have the opportunity. Unfortunately, I can't lie, but think of getting it early and get it often. We're in Chicago. Vote early, vote often. Right? And the Million Hearts campaign, preventing a million heart attacks and strokes over the next 5 years. It's amazing to me. I do a lot of work in prevention. It's amazing to me that something as basic as hypertension, which anytime you go to a healthcare provider, you get your blood pressure checked, right? I mean, it's one of the vital signs. They take your pulse, they take your temperature, they take your blood pressure. And nonetheless, we have lots and lots of missed opportunities to get people's hypertension under control. They're not identified as being hypertensive. It's passed off as, well, it's just white coat hypertension. People don't get the follow-up, they don't get into treatment, or they get prescribed medications, as we're talking about social determinants of health, they get prescribed medications that they can't afford, and so they make choices with their money that don't allow them to take care of their blood pressure, which they really don't sense all that much on a day-to-day basis, but has significant impact on their health. So Region 5. Region 5, as Carter mentioned, is Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin, alphabetically. There is a regional health administrator for each of the 10 regions of the Department of Health and Human Services. You should just Google regional health administrator, find out who your regional health administrator is. Within my office, we like to say that, well, we do support the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health and all of the various parts, but we have staff that are focused on women's health, on minority health, on population affairs, HIV/AIDS, as I mentioned, Let's Move Cities, Towns, and Counties, and the Tobacco Free College Campus Initiative. And we have, so the work that we do is health equity work. We work on some of the most vulnerable, on improving the health of some of the most vulnerable people in our nation, and have expertise in that. One of the people in my office is particularly a thought leader. Michelle Hirsch is a thought leader on trauma-informed care and adverse childhood experiences. And I think that's, I was really happy to see her there as I came into the office because it's such an important topic. My priorities coming into this position were to implement primary and secondary prevention at the earliest opportunity, to integrate mental health and physical health in public health, and to decrease physical inactivity, and I guess, and sedentarism. I just put the physical inactivity in there because I've been told people don't know what I mean when I say sedentarism. But it's what we're doing right now. Except those standing in the back, yeah. And there are some seats up front if you want to sit down. But we sit entirely too much during our days. We weren't designed to sit this much. I think if you looked from a, you know, if you took sort of a macro view and you looked at us as sort of wondering what are these folks doing, just sitting there in front of screens, seemingly doing nothing, you would think there was something very wrong with them. And we do it for hours and hours a day, right? And our bodies weren't really designed for that. I have a walking desk in my office, so as I'm standing there, I snuck it in. Yeah, I snuck it in. I paid for it myself. It's not your money. Don't worry about that. But it actually wasn't that expensive to put together. I took an inexpensive treadmill. Since you're not pounding on it, you don't need it quite. You need it so it doesn't rock too much, but because that can hurt your shins. I found out when I bought too cheap a treadmill the first time. But buy something that at least can not rock while you're walking on it. And then I just put some pieces of wood on the arms and put my laptop up there and just go along at 1.8 miles an hour as I'm typing on my computer or taking conference calls. Those long, long conference calls or webinars. Yeah, it actually keeps you awake too. If you fall asleep, you end up. And I actually think they're better than standing desks because you'll find standing there that your legs are going to get tired, more tired than if you were walking this whole time. Your calves and muscles pump blood back up to your heart. They're actually valves in your veins that keep the blood moving up. But if you're not pumping your muscles, it doesn't pump it back up. So I standing desks are better than sitting, but walking is better than standing. So a little plug for walking desks. So some of the things, that, when I have an opportunity to do something that crosses multiple of these priorities, then I take advantage of them. And one of the things we put together, as people are getting insurance, and they now have this insurance, but they're not quite sure what to do with it because they're not sick right now. One of the things the Affordable Care Act plans have in them is coverage of preventive services at no cost, no copay. And I was on a commission that that Dr. Satcher had put together called the National Commission for Prevention Priorities. We were trying to figure out, this was years ago now, we're trying to figure out if we had an opportunity to prioritize certain preventive services, which ones of the ones that are recommended by the U.S. Preventive Services Clinical U.S. Preventive Services Clinical Task it's too long. Task Force? Yeah. If we were going to prioritize them, which ones would we prioritize? And now they're all covered. If they're A or B recommendations, they're all covered by Affordable Care Act plans. That's great for them to be covered, but what if they're not there for you to access? So we looked at things that that either had a behavioral component or a systems component that are a little bit more difficult to implement in the clinical setting. So with you know, with hypertension or cholesterol screening, they just write an order and they screen you or they do blood work or whatever, and off you go. But screening for tobacco use and referral for appropriate tobacco cessation, or screening for alcohol abuse or dependence and referral to care, depression, intimate partner violence, obesity, breastfeeding, these all have a behavioral component, they all have systems components, and if your providers don't feel comfortable that they can actually provide you with it, they're not going to offer it. You know, they offer what they think they can give you. And if they don't think they have the systems in place to screen for intimate partner violence, they're not going to ask about intimate partner violence. And it may really be the reason the person is in the office to begin with. So we put this together to around preventive services that were applicable to women in the pre and perinatal time frame, and got experts who were able to implement these preventive services, recommended preventive services, in clinical, real-life clinical settings to come and talk about how they did it. We have toolkits for providers to figure out how they can then assess their practice and implement these in their practice. And so I probably talked long enough that if you're interested in this, you either click the picture of it, because now everybody's just clicking pictures, or you wrote down that unwieldy long web link. Another thing we're doing is along with our Office of Adolescent Health, which is also in the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health, is trying to look at these preventive services for adolescents as well. So I don't know how many of you have kids. Some. There's a period of time when they're always going to the doctor and they're getting all of their, they're getting lots of things, lots of vaccinations and checks. Are they on the chart? And then they sort of drop off at adolescence. It's like, and yet adolescence is this incredible period of time when children are developing into the adults they're going to become and making decisions about some of the behaviors that we try to keep them from undertaking and then try to reverse once they take them up. And we really don't do a good job of getting kids into, as adolescents, into the healthcare system and getting them screened and getting them to adopt for themselves, to decide why they would want to adopt healthy behaviors as opposed to adopting unhealthy behaviors. And so we put this series together and we've gone around to different parts of the region. We have one coming up on effective screening and counseling for obesity in adolescents. Gosh, is that next week? Yeah, that's next week. If you go to adolescenthealthseries.net, you'll be able to see these. There's a webinar. We encourage people to see them with colleagues who might think about how they can implement these in their settings. And then we're also going to be putting together a regional network of people interested in adolescent health, and they can share best practices. I'm not sure did this, so I heard the Surgeon General talk at the opening session. I didn't see hear his next talk. I'm not sure if he talked a lot about his call to action to promote walking and walkable communities. But this is another opportunity to move through a number of our priorities, and you know, there are activities like promoting walks, but the more interesting thing is that I think this call to action contains is a request to have people look at the environment, the built environment, and the walkability of neighborhoods. And it's one thing to tell people to go out and walk, but if it doesn't look safe, if it doesn't feel safe, if it isn't safe, then people aren't going to walk and probably shouldn't walk in that area. And so we're looking at opportunities to partner with community groups, with HUD, with National Park Service, to look at the built environment and finding ways to make communities more walkable and have community groups take on themselves making the streets safer to walk and getting people out and walking. So a little plug there. So because this is the Healthy People's 2020 session, I haven't said anything yet. I want to just show you one of the examples of what we do regionally around Healthy People 2020 objective: maternal infant child health, reducing the rate of infant deaths. We know there are high infant mortality rates, and there are high disparities in infant mortality rates. And Region 5 in 2013 was convened by HRSA to develop this collaborative improvement and innovation network to reduce infant mortality, where the various states shared their activities, successes, and challenges, and then developed an ongoing communication and learning collaborative so that we could have a regional implementation of the national strategy. So some examples of things that states did, were doing, and I haven't listed all of the states. Indiana was funding prenatal care coordination teams to provide outreach to low-income pregnant women at risk of preterm or low birth weight babies. Michigan was undertaking the practices for reducing infant mortality through equity projects, which was funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, which I think is in Michigan, and focusing on institutional racism and social determinants of racial disparities for African Americans and Native Americans. Minnesota put out eliminating health disparities grants to local communities and established African American and American Indian infant mortality reviews. And Wisconsin had a statewide advisory committee on eliminating racial and ethnic disparities in birth outcomes, comprehensive home visiting program in Milwaukee, and addressing stress, racism, and the importance of fathers. And so on a regional level, what we like to do, that was a good example of one of the ways we bring states together. States in a region often have some similarities that they may not share with other states. What can be done in California may not be what can be done in Michigan. That said, there are differences between the states and the region, and so sometimes there's more affinity between certain states than others. But identifying and disseminating strategies that have worked in similar settings is one of the strategies that we use. And we tend in our work to have our heads down. We're focused on what we're doing. And we don't always lift our heads up. Conferences like this give us an opportunity to do that. But we don't always lift our heads up and see what are people doing across the way that is working and have that conversation. And discuss common challenges. Developing practice networks. We're doing that with the Adolescent Health Practice Network. And I also like to foster some positive competition. So where there are data, If you see a similar community that's been able to move the needle on one of these Healthy People 2020 objectives, and you just pointed out to, you know, well, they were able to do it over here, there's no reason you couldn't do it. It's achievable. Sometimes people think, well, these goals are not achievable, but when they are achieved or when people are making progress on these goals, pointing that out and encouraging healthy competition, I think, is a good thing. And then we have an opportunity to engage regional federal staff. So often your orientation is back to DC or your funder. Lots of health departments are funded by CDC, and so there's a lot of orientation towards CDC. Spent most of my career with CDC, love CDC, but CDC isn't the entire Department of Health and Human Services. There are other parts like HRSA, like ACF, ACL, FDA, the alphabet soup of federal entities, and we have a regional presence, and you're often able to interface with that those regional personnel on a more intimate level than you can with the folks in DC. And then we have the various federal partners that are outside of HHS that I think for this health and all policies and social determinants work is really, really critical, because we know that these things don't cluster randomly. They cluster around groups that have problems with education, problems with housing, problems with the criminal justice system. These are the same folks, and we all need to be working together on a common solution. So that's it. There's my contact information. Feel free to get in touch with me if you have ideas, interests, and if I can help you get in touch with your regional health administrator. Thanks.